Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my shirt. My plantain shoe, my plantain shoe, my plantain shoe. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, and I have a PSA for you. All of you who are talking shit about my boy Kevior, come outside because you don't know ball.
You start on that
ball again. It's time to stir some shit up.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Don't talk shit about Kevior. Yeah, he looks like an accountant, but have you seen those tats? Have you seen those tats? Yeah, he's serious. Listen,
looks are deceiving, man.
Gang, gang, gang. Gang, gang. Oh, man. We're here again. Thank you, Gabby. As you may have noticed, Gabby introduced the pod today. Gabby's here. I'm here. I'm Dean. And Coach is here. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing good, man. I mean, the weather's fucking terrible, like, but I'm doing good, man.
That sounds like a... like an English problem. It's a great here in Texas. It's
listen, great here that's in hell, not an English know. Problem. It was snowing the other day for me, so. Yeah,
that's why. Well, I have sympathy for all of you. But yeah, we're here to talk about Arsenal 5, Burnley 0. Gabby, were you expecting that when the game started?
Is it cocky to say I was? Is it cocky to say I was? I thought we were going to like slap them. I thought it was going to be a 4-0 though. I didn't think we were going to score 5. I was like, oh, okay. Right. We should score more than 5. But yeah,
probably. Coach, same lineup as West Ham away. Did that make sense to you?
Yeah, for sure. I don't like Turf Moor, even though we have an incredibly good record there. I still don't like it anyway.
Why is that? Are you afraid of orcs or something?
No, it's just, well, I don't like the whole Burnley, Blackburn area kind of thing. They're very much, you know, they're Brexit-y. They voted against, you know, more immigration and shit. They don't like people that aren't a certain hue of white, basically. That's part of the reason why I don't like Burnley, but also the fact that they're, it's an awkward place, isn't it? Like, in general, it's awkward. So I didn't think it was a banana skin, for sure. But, Havertz being in the lineup away from home against a relegation fighting team, absolutely 10 times out of 10, I'm picking Havertz in my team for those fixtures every Cash single money. Time. Every single time. So, yeah, I was happy with the lineup for sure.
Say that again, Gabby.
Cash money.
Cash money, baby. The bench looked pretty light, just like it did last week. We're kind of expecting more progress there. The only person that seemed to join the bench was ESR.
Yeah.
Which excited me anyway. I don't know what it is about ESR, man. Like, I love
can
that
tell you what it is. I can tell you what it is. Out of all of our midfield profiles, and when we talk about Havertz being a unicorn and shit like that, I personally think actually ESR is probably our most unique midfield profile for a whole host of reasons, right? And this is going to sound crazy, but I think he's probably got the best first touch in our midfield. And I know people might not understand what I mean, but genuinely, ESR's first touch is dynamite every time. Like, he's so good at taking it in his stride, you know, on the half turn and shit, and he's always opening up the game one way or the other with it. Like, when he's running at full pace and he takes it in as well, like, nobody else really in our midfield, at least probably in our team, is as good. I think Odegaard is probably second. But with that being said, the fact he can play through the middle He can play as a number 10. He can play as an 8. And he's got the running power of a winger. Like, he genuinely is just a unique midfield profile. And I think that's why maybe you like him. Am I right or wrong?
You said a lot of shit, and I tuned out like halfway through there, but I'm going to go with yes, my nigga, because you know me well. Gabby, I wanted you to touch on a topic that I'm not sure will ever really get enough attention, given the way Mikel has sort of adjusted the way we play this season with a lot more focus on control. But David Raya, I feel like people say, well, he hasn't had any game where he had to save us or he doesn't make a lot of saves, but the coach was saying this week that that's because he prevents a lot of shit from happening before it happens. I feel like you've been seeing that the entire time. Can you further explain to people why the coach feels the way he feels about this guy?
God, David Raya, if I had to explain to you what David Raya does for us, it's like, say what Ederson, I would say what he does for City, but what he used to do, because he's doing a lot of nonsense recently. He's just very proactive as a keeper. He's very proactive as a keeper. I think I was watching a Mikel interview the other day, and he was talking about outfield players, and he was like, basically 11 outfield players, not 10, 11. And he absolutely counts David Raya as another outfield player. He's very good with his feet, very calm under pressure, and he passes through the lines. He made a pass through the lines today. I can't remember if it was to Odegaard or someone else, but it was like he bypassed, like, I think,
was five it the second half? Was it in the second half?
I think it was the second half.
It was Odegaard. I know what you're talking about. It was just.
It was so good. I was like, listen, that guy. I'm not hearing much about Ramsdale right now. That's all I know.
Yeah, that drama has quieted way the fuck down. Coach, I know you're enjoying this City-Chelsea game.
I'm not.
You love Ginger so much. I can see you bricking it with Kevin De Bruyne and taking a free kick. But earlier this year, on one of probably the main pods, I think, you talked about how you think Vincent Kompany is being way too naive with his approach with Burnley. Oh, yeah. Like, he's being a little too cavalier about, we're just going to get relegated. Am I going to change anything? We're going to play the same way. No. I haven't watched Burnley every week, but I did notice that he switched from a 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2.
Yeah.
That obviously did not help them today, but do you think that's a good thing for them moving forward? Is that something that you think would be helpful to them?
So it's Burnley heritage to play a 4-4-2. That's one thing you have to understand. They are one of the most English teams of English teams.
But Vincent Kompany is black.
I know. But it didn't help them today, but it makes sense. I want to go on record and say, I want to apologize again to Luton Town, because all the shit I gave them, I should have saved for Burnley. I was saying from the beginning, I was like, Luton are just dog shit. They've got a bunch of Championship and League One players in their first 11 that are just not, whatever. Really and truly, it looks like Burnley are that team. Like, Burnley are crap. Like, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. They're just crap. Like, absolute crap. There's maybe three good players in the entire 25.
Wait to call someone crap? Is that like a thing?
No. I don't mean to be rude. Like,
I just want you to embrace what you're doing. Stop pretending you're not doing what you're doing.
Be rude.
No. Okay. Cool.
You're messing it up.
If not for the Premier League money and shit like that, they'd arguably be on. Don't worry, it's not a penalty. I know, right? Don't worry, it's not a penalty.
Oh my god, you guys are so funny.
Yeah, they'd arguably be just as bad as Derby, I think. And Derby got 9 points that season, guys. They got 9 points. So Burnley, I think, are teetering on that territory. They're very, very bad. But yeah,
your face is killing me because I'm just watching Kyle Walker break dance because he didn't get the best.
what is this man doing? God. Like,
oh man,
wait, me book that. That's a dive. That's a dive for one, and a second booking for breakdancing.
Yeah.
Real quick, on that 4-4-2, do you think it will help Burnley though?
Oh yeah, we'll hope it'll make them more, especially out of position, it'll make them more solid against teams in and around them. Getting Fofana in 1v1s against centre backs that are in and around the bottom of the half of the table, he'll definitely what's the thing? Oh god, okay, this isn't good, guys. This really isn't good. Okay,
maybe you should pay attention to the podcast you're doing, motherfucker.
Okay, no,
Gabby, I'm gonna come over to you.
No, I'm joking. No, cool. Fofana, like I said to you in the group, Fofana is a handful, right? a genuine, genuine handful. And I feel like the few times he got one-on-one with Saliba today in particular, Saliba wasn't really moved by it per se, but I could see how a left centre back would be in deep trouble with someone like him. And I thought that 4-4-2 basically allows for them to play a little bit more direct, you know, get some flick-ons, get some crosses wide for him kind of thing. But Arsenal, unfortunately, are a team that love defending crosses. And whatever tactic they wanted to employ today, it played again into our centre back's hands, basically. And I think, yeah, it's a good move, but just not against Arsenal. Genuinely.
Obviously. Thanks, Coach. Gabby, we had a quick start. This is the kind of thing we haven't seen since essentially, I mean, even when we beat West Ham 6-0 last weekend, it wasn't a quick start. We didn't score for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. This was basically, and we don't want to do this anymore, but we have to do it. This was last season all over again. To score within 4 minutes of the start of the game.
I love it. I love it. Shotgun start. Like, let's get it started.
Sir, Rice played it out to Martinelli. He ran into space. A very unique cross. I didn't mind the technique at all. Then Odegaard topped him with the technique for the shot and the goal. But what did you make of our start in general and the goal itself?
I get annoyed by Arsenal and our slow starts. We always seem to need that, like, 15 minutes or so to, like, work ourselves into the game, at least this season and before last season. And I was like, we need to, like, I want to get this, like, get the ball rolling. Because when you start early, like, they can't sit deep. They just can't. Like, mm-hmm. You have to get out. And I love that because people love sitting deep against Arsenal. And I'm sick of watching that shit.
can I jump in quickly, Sid? I don't know how true this is. One of my friends put a tweet in a group chat talking about how Arsenal this season have faced on record the deepest blocks in the world in terms of actual
it's true. I've seen the stats.
Okay, yes. Cool. Okay, if that's the case. So with that being said, and I know I don't want to talk about it a million times, but people complaining about Arsenal, you know, being so potent from set pieces and it's just like, oh, it's a cop out for us and shit like that. Doesn't it make sense that we've actually mastered being good at set pieces so that even when teams are sitting deep, people getting corners and shit, kind of like we're still finding ways to score? Isn't that a good thing? It shouldn't be a thing that, you know, it's looked upon as a negative. When we beat Palace 5-0, our first three goals were all from set pieces. You know, they could have easily been all from set plays, but the simple fact is you score one, doesn't matter how it goes in, the game opens up. Fortunately, today we scored one from open play, but to me, it doesn't matter. They all go in. Getting the first goal is all that matters. They all go in. So,
yeah. You'll never hear any complaints from me. I love a good set piece goal. Always. Absolutely.
And if we're being pedantic about it, you're looking at the top scorers in the league, and you go Erling Haaland with however many the fuck goals he has. Then Arsenal has how many from set pieces? Like 17, I think now.
Yeah, it's like 16 or 17. It's crazy.
That's a striker right there. That striker y'all been crying about. That's him.
That's crazy.
So y'all can stop crying about that shit. That's where I'm at with it. We got a little wasteful after that though, because Gabby mentioned a little earlier that we left some goals on the table. And this was the period in which we did that. And the guiltiest culprit was Leandro Trossard.
before I start on Trossard, I don't want to get away from the Odegaard goal, because that technique. Oh, cash money, 10 of 10, like exquisite, sensational. I love that guy.
I love it.
But Trossard, Sleepy Messi was sleepy today because I don't know what he was doing. He was just like vibing all over the pitch and his movement was so good. He was running around and doing the things he needed to do except scoring. And Trossard is one of our most clinical like attackers. So I was like, what? Please, can you put the ball into the back of the net? Like,
he's also saying the same for Chelsea.
Oh man, it's enough. It was too many chances wasted. But at least, like, I don't mind the chances wasted if, like, at the end of the day, we score five. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Trossard, he had an opportunity to round the keeper at one point.
That was offside, to be fair. But I will say, the play before that from Saka was when you talk about world-class players, that's what it was. On the touchline, no space to go, he still found his half yard. Like, Don't worry, Gabby, I've seen it. I know. But yeah, like, guys, if you can, go back and watch that chance, if you can, from Trossard. I was offside. Saka's play before that, that's what sets him apart from all these other little names you want to put him next to. These other players are not able to do that. Create a chance literally from nothing when you've got all the pressure in the world on you and you still get out of it.
They don't have the facilities for that. Yeah. Too much nonsense on Saka's name. I literally wanted him. I wish he's not a petty person because he's a nice guy. But I love him to do the shirt reveal, the why always me.
Yeah.
Please. Enough.
How nice is he though? Because I don't know if you guys noticed, post Dubai.
Yeah.
First he fixed his hair, which was nice. Got rid of that stupid hair dye. I'd like if he cut it lower, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah. Then he started chewing gum during games.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
That's some real killer shit to do. Like, not just
chewing gum. That's some Gabrielle stuff right there.
Yeah, that's some killer shit to do. So I'm loving the evolution. I think he's going to become what we expect him to become. I think we all worry about him so much because he was so young when he started with us and he's our boy, but I think he has aspirations beyond what we think he can become. This man is trying to do Ballon d'Or shit, essentially.
Yeah, you're right. He is a man now, which is crazy because I always think of him as a boy in my mind, but he's not anymore.
Yeah, we got to stop that star boy shit. It's over. Like, he's just a star now. He's just a star. You know, he's a whole... Cool. You know what? We should not record these games while we watch rivals play because I cannot focus for shit. But we're going to keep trucking through this.
Maybe almost 2 years ago, I was so enamored with how well Foden was playing, especially at his age kind of thing. And I kept on saying that, you know what? We need to stop comparing him to his age group kind of thing. We need to start comparing him to men. The same applies to Saka. And it's probably applied to Saka, if I'm being generous, probably since the beginning of last season. Saka's numbers are not comparable to his age group and age mates because he's putting up numbers that someone like Ousmane Dembele will be proud of. Do you know what I mean? So this is Saka's third season on the bounce, getting double figures in the league alone. And he's done this before March, right? And then he's done 7 assists. He's going to get a double-double again. He's actually going to get a double-double again. So yeah, Saka shouldn't be calling him a star boy. We shouldn't be talking about young player this, young player that. Unfortunately, he's just the man. That's it. He's the man. You know, there was a period of time when the stats was only Salah, but now Saka's in that conversation. Only Saka and Salah. Only Saka, do you know what I mean? It's that that's where he's gone to now. So
that's where he should be,
shit, baby. Yeah, real AFCON shit. You know, Africans in the Prem, baby. this week, unlike last week, like midway through the first half, we started inverting Ben White. This week, we just started inverting him from the beginning. What differences does that provide in your mind? Like, what are you liking about it? What do you not like about it?
Do you know, this is a very good point that you brought up, right? And I actually want to go a little bit deep on it. So I saw a clip today from Gary Neville's podcast talking about how they don't really do tactics. Don't worry, Dean. And it's Dean scratching his face. Like, he's thinking where I'm going with this. But he was talking about how Ferguson never used to do tactics, and they'd always he leave it to the players to kind of like figure stuff out in terms of the way they want to do things. For example, if Gary Neville went forward, then Dennis Irwin would obviously sit. You know, if Roy Keane
false
goals to go for. Just what those things, like, you know, basic principles, and then they essentially, like, you know, within a solid framework of a 4-4-2 or 4-3-3 or whatever, right? And a lot of people use that as a stick to beat Sir Alex Ferguson with, but people forget how simple of a game football is. All you need is an equal number of players on each side and 2 goals, basically, and then you work shit out between yourselves. Like, that's how simple football can be. And there was this big furore last week about, oh yeah, Arteta has reinvented the wheel. Like, he started inverting Ben White, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, that's great he's done that. But if you look at the profiles if you understand the profiles of Arsenal's players and what we have available to us, it becomes less of a surprise what Arteta does with those players. So, of course, it makes sense that, okay, now he stopped being stubborn with the left-hand side bias, and he's realized, you know, I'm going to keep Kiwi or left back, and Ben White's going to go forward. And when he does that, we're going to be a solid three. And I was like, well, it's the same exact same principle as one fullback goes, one fullback stays, right? It's just within a different, it's just a framework. It's slightly different because we've got different profiles. We play with a front three rather than a front two kind of thing. Same thing in midfield. You know, Odegaard drops deep, but when he goes, guess who stays? Declan Rice. It's these things are very, very basic. It's just that the players are just so talented that we end up kind of overthinking shit. But it's like, well, no, they're all capable of doing these things. It's just that the framework that they put within seems a bit more complicated than what they are. That's what it is. So to answer your question about what Ben White's doing, logically it makes sense. He's one of the most technically gifted players. Like Ben White is so good at football that it kind of frightens me sometimes. Like I look at the goal last season that Nketiah scored against West Ham, where he's knocked it over Benrahma's foot and he's given it to Odegaard kind of thing. That goal doesn't happen without Ben White being confident in his own ability and having the actual ability. Same way the goal that we scored against Chelsea this season where, what do you call it? Where Trossard scored in the last minute, right? It comes again from him literally taking a pass like where the ball is literally like around hip height and he's swiveled on it and passed it first time to Havertz kind of thing. Those kind of things are not really funny. Kirio's a great player, but he's not capable of doing those things. He doesn't have that and he's locked kind of thing. So you want your better players higher up the pitch being able to do these things in high pressure and high intensity situations because they've got the technical ability for it. So, yeah, I love the fact he's inverting Ben White. And even if Zinchenko comes back into the team, yeah, Zinchenko is probably more gifted than Ben White, but there's no reason why Zinchenko can't sit and Ben White still do the same thing. There's no reason for him not to be able to do that.
You lost me there. You lost me there.
I'm you had me just at the top. I was like, there is a reason.
It's an option. I'm saying it's an option.
It's an option. Okay, fair enough. You can call it an option, but to say there's no...
I'm literally just saying that while we have that left-hand side bias because of Zinchenko, if they both play, now teams are thinking which one of them is going to invert. They're both adept at doing it. They both can hurt us from doing it kind of thing. So... yeah,
Gabby. So he mostly focused on the positives of it. I think we all generally love Big Gabby now. You clearly love Big Gabby. That's your boy. But do you have any concerns that when we invert Ben White, it means that Big Gabby becomes our central center back because Saliba has to go cover that wide right area? Do you have the confidence in him that he can handle that job? Because I remember preseason.
That's the question. Do I have confidence in him? Yes. However, I have talked to people before about Gabriel being the center back, and I've heard some other people complain about it. So I understand the concerns, but I think, especially this season, I think that he's been so beyond reproach. Like, he's been so good. Even he was so good today, even in his one-on-one duels with, remind me of the guy's name.
Fofana.
Yes. Even with his one-on-one duels with Fofana today, I was like, oh yeah, he's on it today. Like, you ain't gonna get past him. Like, you know? So I'm not worried about it, but I understand where it could potentially fail us, maybe.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, I'm always gonna have more confidence in Saliba playing that role, but I also think I don't know as much about football as Mikel Arteta does, and he's the one that sees these guys in training every day. So if he's willing to take that risk.
Point right there.
Right. You know, if he's willing to take that risk, then I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. He's seen something to make him say that's okay, you know. Because on Gabriel, just a little bit longer, because I can't help reacting to the things I see on the internet, and we'll get into second goal after this. But I resent the fact that people act as if just because he's so good now that he was always so good. Like, the talent was always there. He was always a really good physical player, but he's improved quite a bit over the years. Like, if he was still the same player that he was when he got here, Kivior would be benching him right now. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's no diss to how good he was when he got. I mean, he scored on his debut away to Fulham, you know. So he's been showing value from jump. But there's a reason why Brazil didn't take him to the World Cup. You know, he still had a mistake in him. And after that setback, he cleaned it up. He literally has not, for me, I can't remember an error since the World Cup.
Do you think it was the hair transplant, maybe?
Look good, feel good, man. Look good, feel good.
All right.
But I will say this, he came to us in a team that were, I don't want to say shit, but that was so below.
It was fucking shit. It was shit.
We were so below par. If he had come to us when we already had this team, right, I don't think he would be playing as badly as he did. I feel like he had to overcompensate. You know what I mean?
I accept that. I agree. I think I don't think he ever played badly. I never thought he played badly. I just thought he improved. He just cut errors out of his game. And the main thing that he's improved since he got here is his passing.
Oh yeah,
he always had the talent, but he's improved it. Coach, you want to go longer on the passing?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. But I think the main thing about his passing is, you can almost look at it and see that Arteta has literally sat down with him. One of the coaches sat down with him and said that you've got the ability. Now this is how you get it. This is how you do it more consistently. We're going to trust you in build up now, because there was a period last season where teams would press him, but they wouldn't press Saliba because they knew Saliba could get it out of the back no problem. And now it's like, which one of the centre backs do you press? Because one of them is going to find a really good pass into midfield, and there's nothing really much you can do about it, kind of thing. So it's definitely a thing where I think that he's worked on, but he's needed to actually have someone believe that he can do it. Like, a lot of the time in top level football, it's not really an issue of talent sometimes. It's been given the platform and given the belief that you can actually execute these kind of things. So I think for sure it's definitely a coaching job that's been there, but he's had the ability to do it. You know, coaches don't ask you to do shit that you can't do unless you're Mourinho, but yeah.
All right. Near the end of the first half, which I can't remember a whole lot of threat from Burnley that half. So, I mean, it's almost hard to do a podcast when you win so convincingly, because there's nothing to complain about. And sports fans, our default setting is to bitch about things. That's all we really want to do. We just want to bitch about shit. You know, like, but we can't really bitch about this. This was a supreme performance. But it took a penalty to get the second goal in this game right before halftime. Mm-hmm. And Saka converted it pretty casually. Let's talk about the build-up to it. It was Odegaard, because the build-up was really good. Odegaard played the ball into Havertz, who I thought was really good in this, you know, baseboard type of way. You know, I think people think of a more glamorous striker just controlling that ball and scoring himself. But Havertz is a sacrificial lamb. He plays for other people. I've accepted that. I love it. In any event, Trossard drives into the box, and what's this Frenchman's name? Asignon brings him down. I thought it was a stonewall penalty, right?
Oh, yeah.
Was
there any
doubt? I was going to say, do you guys actually think it was a penalty? Because I've been hearing a lot of people say, oh, it wasn't a pen. But I'll take it.
Bullshit reasons, man. It was 100% a penalty, man. Let's not waste any time thinking about it, man.
Okay, good. Because I was confused by what I was reading. But good. We're good on this pod. But yeah, the penalty itself, though, Saka made it a bit of an adventure, didn't he?
Yeah,
because I feel like the goalkeeper already dove in the direction he hit it to.
Mm. Yeah.
And on another day, that might have gotten saved. Am I tripping about that one?
No, you're not tripping.
The goalkeeper's, I've called Burnley crap enough times, but genuinely, one of the first things they need to improve is their goalkeeper for sure. Because he's dog shit. I know he's at England under 21, like number one and shit, but his game Trafford is very, very bad at his job, unfortunately. Like, he's just not good.
His name Trafford, man. I don't know much about England, but his name is Trafford. Yeah, I don't fuck with him already. So.
Somebody else that's even slightly better than him saves that penalty. It wasn't a good penalty, you know.
I was gonna say that. I was like, I don't think that was a good pen. I mean, I'll take the goal, obviously, but I don't think it was a good pen. And I think whenever we do get a striker, that I need Saka off a pen so he gets to worry about other things.
That's okay, so now I gotta put on my thug jacket.
First off,
it was only a questionable penalty because he hit it in the direction the goalkeeper was falling down already. That was the only issue. But the actual strike itself was crisp, it was firm, and the goalkeeper still tried to get there and could not get there.
He said, power.
And in general, about penalties, the only good penalty is the one that goes in.
Actually,
it doesn't matter how it goes in. We're just picking nits here at this point, because we have nothing to talk about because Burnley were dog shit.
Because
it was halftime right afterwards. It was halftime. Yeah. Obviously, we weren't going to change anything. Then Saka was like, I'm not done yet. Because the first thing I remember from the second half was that he scored a goal again. Odegaard with the pass into him. I thought it was an excellent goal, Gabby.
That's another thing I love. And not just
before we go on there, so I just quickly want to say, do you guys think we left about 2-3 goals out there in the first half? Because I personally think we did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why we're talking shit about Trossard.
Okay, cool. Sorry, Gabby, go on.
No, that's what I love. So I the coming out of the gates quick and not doing the let's like breathe into the game again, like hit them on a break again, like 1-2 punch right after the halftime whistle. Like, I love that because it's the dagger. It's the dagger. Even if we weren't up 2-0, like, I just think that would have been the dagger already. Like, demoralized.
And 1-0, that would demoralize them
probably. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But in terms of the finish, Saga, that was nasty. That was nasty. I love when players roof it into the net. Like, rip the net
it's
open.
It's my personal favorite type of finish. Aguero is the master of it.
Can someone say weak foot already, please?
Yeah, of course. We're getting into it. And this is why.
Sorry, I just needed that. I was twitching.
This is why we're talking about Saka not being compared to his age mates, because really and truly, like, who else really on the right in the world? I know Usman Dembele, obviously, he's ambidextrous kind of thing, but
he doesn't score. Keep mentioning goals. Him, man. People might think he's actually as good as Saka. You've said his name twice. Stop this.
But these are the sort of names that people will talk about. Say, oh, is Saka better than this guy? I'm just saying, for example. But
I hate doing the pause with coach after a Champions League week. He sees all his favorite European bitches and starts mentioning them and shit. Stop feeding on Saka. Respect the fucking gangster and shit. They're not mates. Don't talk about Usman Dembele and Saka.
If you're listening, yeah, you'd let me land. And I was saying,
no, nigga.
The reason why I bring him up is because people talk about these names, you know, these are, you know, the top five wingers, this and is he better than this guy or that guy kind of thing. Saka's doing all these things that these guys simply don't do or can't do. Like, they actually aren't. And that finish himself, Saka's actually at this point trademarked it. When you've done it at least 3 or 4 times over 2 seasons, that's home a trademark. Home and away. That's a trademark now. That's actually a trademark. He done it away to Leeds last season. He done it home to Everton. He done it he done it obviously this season. He done it one more time last season. I can't remember who it was against, but I'm so sure he's done it last season 3 times even. But that's his thing. That's Saka's bag now, so you can't really stop him. And you know, there's a famous quote about when he first met Arsene Wenger, and Arsene Wenger said, look, if you want to improve, use your right foot more. And literally since then he's just been clawing it with his right foot, whether it's a roof of the net finish or whatnot. But yeah, like, Saka has no mates. And when you talk about taking games away from teams and being the decisive man, decisive player, Saka has that in his gene. That he's our go-to guy. And when we want to take a game away from someone, Saka's the one to make it happen. He actually is. Whether it's a goal, whether it's an assist, whether it's a mazy run, he's the one to take the game away from teams now.
I think he's going to be our inevitable player.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Salah's inevitable for, you know, for Liverpool. And then, in my opinion, it's not Haaland. It's KDB is inevitable for City. And I think that's going to be Saka for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I agree.
So let's go a little deeper on this. If you guys feel that Saka is going to be inevitable, and I agree with you guys, obviously, he's my child. Mine. He's only mine, not yours, mine. But if he's going to be that guy, and I agree with you that he's going to be that guy, because I'm pretty sure at this point I just expect him to get end product in every game. I think moving forward, I can expect Saka to get me a minimum of a goal or an assist in every game.
Every game.
For the rest of his career. That's the way I feel about it. There'll be the occasional miss, there'll be the occasional explosion, but he just has that consistency about him. Yeah. So if that's the case, why do we need a 9?
Well, because unfortunately, every single good team has
because more than one they option. Have a 9.
No, because they have more than one option. So
more than one option.
So yeah, like
are not playing it the same way Jesus was playing it. This looks very different.
Oh, you said why do we need a 9? I put it like this: do you think a 9 improves us? Yes or no? No, yes. No explanation. Yes or no?
Yes. 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 Yes.
Exactly. Well,
we have
you Eddie didn't think it would improve us, we wouldn't need one.
We have Eddie. He's a 9.
Stop the nonsense.
I'm just saying, like, so we're supposed to get a 9 and change the way we play?
No. Because
that's a question. Why do you think we're going to change the way we play?
Because we can't play the way we're playing now if we have a pure 9. The movements have to be different by default.
No, they don't. I'll tell you why. Because we're still creating chances for
a 9.
Box. Yes.
Yeah. I think we need to spend
all this money on someone that seems to be a guaranteed finisher when we're watching Haaland fucking put the shit wide in this game against Chelsea right now.
Keep talking shit about Haaland. Like, the game's not over yet, bro.
Yeah, I was gonna say, please.
You're about to get subbed off, man. Little bitch ass. Okay. It's not me, guys. If something happens, it's not me. Please don't egg my house. Let's keep moving, folks. Real quick, best wishes to Aaron Ramsey. That did not look like a crazy tackle between him and Odegaard, but
I don't think it was a tackle. I think his foot got stuck in the turf.
Yeah.
When I watched the replay back, he did not look good.
No.
Yeah, I saw him hold his knee. So I don't know, but usually they don't give you the oxygen for
That's exactly what I said. I was like, is he taking oxygen right now? Like that, he must be in extreme pain because he looked bad.
Well, hope he gets better soon. Hope it's a whole lot of nothing. You know, hope he's okay very, very soon. And he also has the coolest name in the world, Aaron Ramsey. Like, come on. Sarge, we already talked some shit about him, and I'm going to have to talk shit about him again because he missed another. I don't know that I would call it a sitter, but I'd expect him to score that chance. And right as I was bitching about it, I actually tweeted from the account, and Gabby was like, stop that. You're being rude. And before I could respond to her, Trossard had scored a banger.
Yeah.
But it's time to praise Kivior again, Gabby, because I noticed that in the build-up to that goal, he was trying to set Saka up. He had options. Mm-hmm. And the cross he played in was meant for Bukayo Saka.
It didn't sure get was. There. He was winding up for it.
That's your boy. That's your boy looking out for the team. That's emotional.
Is this 2 Kivior assists in 3 games, I think?
Wow.
And he should have a goal technically against Liverpool, if we're being for real.
Here's the thing, guys. I want you to guys, if you guys can remember the actual situation, how many players we had in the box, and why I'm talking about why a 9 doesn't change much. The simple fact is our fullback got forward, crossed the ball in into 3 people into the box.
For the people who can't see us, Dean just fell out.
Yeah, like, he's not even here anymore. All we can see is just the SPS logo on his screen. That's it. But the simple fact is, Kivior crossed the ball, and at the back post, there was Havertz, Trossard, and Saka. Right? So, again, a 9 is going to be there in that situation. Maybe a 9 scores from that before Trossard does. We don't know. But simple fact is, we're still creating chances for our forwards in the box. Shout out to Trossard for looking, not Trossard, to Kivior for looking for Saka. He knows who the main man is, man, for real, man. He understands.
Listen, excuse all me. I know is I was leaving here with something. Yeah. Listen, I got a Kiwi assist, I got a Kai goal. I don't care about nothing else.
Well, didn't he technically get 2 assists? Because the fourth goal happened. We'll talk about subs after this, but the fourth goal happened and it was from a quick talk through throwing from Kivior.
I thought that was a second assist too, but I don't think they gave it to him.
Why would they not give you an assist for a throw-in?
I don't know. I think it depends on how long you have the ball, like seconds wise or something like that. I don't know, some bullshit.
That's wild, man, because it was a long run from Havertz.
No, surely it's still an assist, because I've seen assists given. For example, Busquets got an assist for Messi's goal against Real Madrid, where he wound him up and let him go. Like, so surely, yeah, that's an assist as well. But
listen, he deserves it.
Yeah, for sure.
He deserves it. But I will say, that Kai goal, if we're getting into that.
There we go. I was going to say, I didn't want to talk too much about it because I feel like that's your property. Carry on.
If we're getting into that,
why not?
He cooked that guy. If you letting Kai Havertz sprint past you, nutmeg you, and then score, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. That was crazy.
Well, I'm glad you said on his weaker foot, coach, because I just remembered that when he missed against Liverpool for Saka to score,
yeah,
it was on his weaker foot, and no one mentioned it. Yeah. We were all just like, you should have scored. You should have scored. Absolutely. So no one gave him that credit. But it was on his weaker foot, technically. So
he put it like this. Had he put that finish today away against Alisson, that goes in because it was way more assured. He's hit the ball, not into the ground. He hit it true. He hit through the ball, and it's gone past the keeper before he can react. Last week he hit into the ground and shit. It was just bad. But honestly, I love that goal because it showed confidence. You know, you're dribbling the ball, you know, even though you're 4-0 up kind of thing, it would be easy for him to run straight into the corner and look for the cross. He decided, no, I'm taking this shit like for myself kind of thing. And it worked. I'm happy for him, man.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of his goal against Brighton. that like ball and just running, and everybody was like, oh my god, I don't know if he's gonna, I was like, he's gonna score, let's be real, like, yeah, he's gonna score that one, like, come on now, have some faith in my boy. Okay,
that's our boy over here on SPS. You know, I saw a clip today that I'd never seen before of Havertz, because people post all sorts of shit when the transfer rumors go crazy. But the Mbappe stuff this week, with Mikel saying that Arsenal is the sort of club that should be interested in a player like that. You know, a big club manager acting like a big club manager. It's not a big deal, guys. Gabby, you feel like saying something, say something.
No, I agree. I mean, I had this conversation with Jess, my friend Jess, and she said the same thing. Like, if we want to be a big club again, because we had that moment where we just were a banter club. If we want to be a big club again, you have to believe that you're going to get the best players. Hmm. Like, you just you have to say that. Mikel couldn't have said anything else.
I will say, though, even when Arsenal were winning stuff kind of thing, we never traditionally went for big players. In our peak, and I mean absolute peak years, the biggest player we bought was Reyes. And it was a statement signing, because I don't know if those of you that may or not remember, but he was supposed to go to Real Madrid. Fuck's sake, man. He was supposed to go to Real Madrid. And we beat them to the signature. Like, it cost, I think at the time we paid 9 million for him, I want to say. I think it was 9 million we paid for him, and that was obviously close to our record. But we didn't really, you know, go for these big names that everybody wanted to at the time, kind of. We just did what we could with what we had. Now, Arsenal in a position where if Mbappe was available at a reasonable price in terms of his wage and stuff like that, there's no reason why Arsenal wouldn't be in serious consideration, just because of the way the landscape has changed. But regardless of who's on the market, the top players are looking at Arsenal. They have to be looking at Arsenal now because of the way we've conducted ourselves over the last 3 years, I'd say. So yeah.
Not bad, Mikel. Not bad, they do. Good stuff. But any event, I saw the clip I wanted to mention. Sonnet posted a clip of Havertz dapping Mbappe up. They were doing the little bro hug shit. And I remember thinking, like, when I saw him score today, I kind of felt like he had the same aura about him, because he actually looked very confident. Like, oh, we're peers. I'm dapping up a peer here. I'm not just like stealing somebody's shine, you know. And I'm like, this guy was rated as the best young talent in Europe. Not that long ago. Then he went to Chelsea and he broke him.
Did you watch the last World Cup? Like, when they played against, listen, best player on the pitch? That's his peer, for real. I think people like to lie about it, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. We had a bunch of, because that was the fifth goal, so we might as well just move on. We had a bunch of subs at the 69th minute. White went off for Cedric. Rice went off for Jorginho. Saka went off for Nelson. I'm loving that so much, 2 weeks in a row.
Mikel said, and Trossard went off for Nketiah. I'm sorry. Rest. Mikel said, fuck your hat trick. Rest.
Absolutely. I know he was probably burning a little bit because he really wanted that hat trick, but it'll have to wait for another day. Coach, though, would you have let him stay on to try to get that hat trick?
No, Porto in the week, man. Come on, man. Like, we got serious business, man. Like, yeah, like, sorry, like, love you, Saka, but yeah, your personal thingy, like, can wait for another. Like, you get a hat trick against Newcastle, bro. It's fine. Porto awaits, man. So yeah.
That said, the fifth sub was Havertz for ESR, and shockingly enough, because we had a lot of extra time in this game due to the injury stop for Aaron Ramsey. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of time, so he actually got to play like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I want to say every time he touched the ball, he kind of did something cool with it. Yeah.
That's ESR. That's ESR right there. It's bread and butter. We talked about it earlier, but ESR definitely glides with the ball. Like, yeah. He always finds himself in the right position too. He tends to make, or at least I believe he tends to try to make the right passes as well. So. Yeah, right. He's always doing something good with the ball, positive with the ball.
Oh man, okay. We didn't get Vincent Kompany fired because Burnley have no shame. They want to be stylists, like we don't know what their heritage is. We remember you fucking orcs. but keep enjoying this fake shit. We're moving on. Our next game is midweek against Porto. Mm-hmm. Coach, I'm here to blackmail you. Are we going to have to do an Arsenal pod for this game?
It's
a big game. It's a Champions League knockout. We haven't done this in a long time.
We might have to. We haven't. I just need to say the stat. We have not won a Champions League tie in 14 years.
No, we have. Oh.
Crazy.
The full tie. Yeah, the full tie. Yeah.
The full tie.
Yeah, an actual game. We won one in 2015 against Monaco.
Damn, I was a virgin back then.
2015. I mean, I was gonna say we won one against Bayern too.
Yeah.
That 2-0 at home that stressed me. I've never.
That was a group game. That was a group game.
Yeah, it was a group then. That never stressed me out more.
The Monaco one. I remember it unfortunately because I was
why are we talking about this, man? Why?
This is Champions League, man. Don't worry, it's Champions League. Memories. But yeah, man, like Monaco Stadium, yeah, is interesting, man, because you're so far away from the pitch, man. But yeah, man, we could have easily won that 3-0, and yeah, we just didn't. I remember at full time, Ozil dropped to the ground, like literally, because he just done everything he could. He created like about 8 great chances. Like, you know, Ramsey scored, Welbeck scored. It just wasn't enough, man. So, yeah. But don't worry.
Yeah. What are we expecting in Porto this week?
Well, they're the last team that we beat to get through. I think to get through, or what do you call it, right? Because over the tie. Because I remember we lost at their ground and we beat them 5-0 at home. I think Bentner got a hat trick. So potentially it could be the same thing again, where we get a good result away from home and then we just literally smoke them at home. So yeah. That's what I'm hoping for.
I think we'll smoke them at home, but I want to play to respect to the Champions League. So I just want a professional performance. That's all.
Yeah, I don't.
Winning is a habit. Okay.
If we don't lose yet, then we're good.
Okay. We're good. I'll tell you guys this much: Porto, their last two results were a 0-0 draw with Rio Ave, and on Monday lost 3-2 away at Arouca. A team I've never heard of. I've heard of Rio Ave. I know them. I don't know Arouca. So with that in mind, I think our confidence is somewhat justified, and I hope we do well. Fabio Vieira, you get ready for the second leg because you're not seeing no
effects. Where are you, Fabio? Like, hello?
He apparently trained this week. He trained this week. So he's close, but if he didn't get minutes in this game, then I don't think there's any way he gets. Maybe he might. If it goes very well,
a lot of mind games. I think he's doing a lot of mind games because I haven't seen Tommy either, and I'm like, there's no way Tommy's injured again. Like, it's just, it's crazy to me. He played all of the Asia Cup, and now all of a sudden, imaginary friend. Absolutely not. Find him. We're out though.
I enjoyed the day so much, and I was so confident in Arsenal's potential win at Burnley today that I wasn't even worried when I didn't see Tommy. I was just like, yeah, he's probably fine. Maybe just taking his time to sign that contract or something, you know, because I'm happy to have him. Injuries are injuries. I am happy
to
have
him.
That's my boy. You know, I don't think he'll be hurt forever. They'll figure this shit out at some point, and he'll give us a good run of games. In any event, I think we've done more than enough here. We probably went longer than we wanted to because we're also watching City at the moment.
One eye on that game.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because we won 5-0, and we can only control what we can control. So, my friends, tell the people peace.
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 Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day. Hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantation, plantation.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.